Another edition of Twat Radio. Tonight, I'm your host, Dossman, and I'm going to be flying solo tonight. Tonight's topic is going to be computer forensics. What is computer forensics? Basically, it's the exploration or investigation of a computer system to try to find evidence to link someone to a activity or, more typically, a crime that has been alleged to have been committed. Back in the day, people like Dan Farmer and Wietz Venema, I'm sure I didn't pronounce that correctly, but anyway, we're doing a lot of work in computer investigation and kind of led the pack as far as how do we present this data in a way that could be used in a court of law and whatnot. So now, you know, fast forward a decade or 15 years or however, I don't know when they started their work with this. Now in this current year of 2005, we have a whole field of computer forensic practitioners. We have people that are doing this for a living. So it's not, for me personally, it's not near as exciting as I used to think it was when I was first getting into computers. And that was a big interest of mine was, it's kind of cool to try to figure out what someone was doing with this computer system. Kind of partially led to my current job as a system administrator. I was, although getting into systems was fun, keeping people out potentially be as much fun, or just about half of the other half of the equation. Enough about that. I'd like to first break this down into three sections. First, what are the tools and such that can be used to investigate or lead a forensic investigation? Second, what things will these tools find? And then the next is where's the future going? What are people going to find? How are people going to find new ways around these things? So this is a constant back and forth battle. First thing, the long-lived traditional discussion is, you come into a system that needs to be investigated. You're going to take it to a court of law if enough evidence is found and present this data to try to convict an individual of a crime. In order to say, no, judge, we did not tamper with this at all, a lot of people are of the mindset that they will just simply pull the power cord on the system. And that will prevent, that'll just stop all activity. There'll be no chances for dead man switches to be tripped for not shutting the system down properly. However, you also lose any system services that were running in memory. Booby traps could be set in the same fashion that you're trying to prevent. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. You lose a lot of your possible advantage you could gain by examining the system live, but you also prevent the system from becoming corrupted as far as tampering with any disk. I mean, if you say it's a Windows box and you come up and you do a orderly shutdown, timestamps are modified, system files are written to, potentially, say, logs are written to as the services are shut down, Windows are shut down, so it could potentially be overwriting free unused space on the disk. And that's one of the first places that, one of the many places that a forensic investigator is going to need to look and try to determine, you know, is there anything juicy out there that could be used to link this person to this activity. And so there's kind of a distinction there. Okay, one, let's say you're in a corporate environment. Are you going to take the investigation all the way to law enforcement, or is this just going to be an in-house investigation to try to find what's going on, what's happening? Well, That's been debated back and forth, and people will you know argue both ways, you know, whatever. Probably if this is going to be a law enforcement, something you're going to take to law enforcement, you probably just want to pull a cord. You know, there's new technologies that are possibly allowing you to mitigate this. Like there's a group that came up with a tool that will let you use your 1394 port to actually get a live capture of all the memory in the system with as little damage or tampering of the memory subsystem as possible. And they actually had this implemented on an iPod, as far as I could tell. And I'll have links for all this stuff on the TWAT Tech website for this particular episode. So, you know, things are changing. It's not quite the way it used to be. You could now potentially get a full memory image. The other big thing that you lose when you just pull the power cord is the any potential passwords that were used to log into the system. Let's say they have an encrypted file system. They logged in, you catch them in the middle of the act, whatever, and if you power the system down, the password to access that encrypted file system is lost. That's a pretty big hazard. Although, for better or for worse, I think not very many people even use encryption. And encryption itself is a double-edged sword, which we'll cover later. But anyway, those are some things there to consider. Moving on, the next debate is, do you use commercial tools, or do you use your own tools written in-house, or open-source tools to do the forensic investigation? Commercial vendors, like, say, Guidance Software that makes Encase, a big part of their literature is how they are court-tested and proven tools. No hackers, lawyers going to be able to invalidate our evidence because our tool is accepted in court. And there's some legitimacy to that. However, I don't really think that there's enough to that argument to prevent you from using any open source tools. Like, say, part of the what you're going to want to do also, if this is going to be a federally or a investigation that's going to be handled by law enforcement, the first thing you do once you get the disk and get the system powered down is you're going to image that disk device. You do not ever investigate or touch any the actual disk device, because even, you know, some people, well, I can mount the device read-only on my operating system. It's not a big deal. Well, yes and no. You know, you're taking a pretty big risk. You're going to be spending a lot of time and effort and money taking this to court. So why would you take the risk of accidentally wiping it because you forgot to use the read-only flag? Or you modified it some timestamp because you actually forgot to mount it read-only. That's where the hardware write blocker comes into play. And these are devices that, let's say you put your removed disk device into an external USB enclosure, and then you get a USB write blocking device or something like that. I suppose, something I didn't have that in my notes, but oh well. But anyway, above and beyond, you know, this point, using, you know, do I use commercial tools? Do I use open source tools? You know, hey, whatever works, I think. And of course, I'm not a forensic investigator. I don't know. I just read a lot about it. I try to keep up on what's going on. It's kind of interesting to just follow some mailing lists and see what's going on with this kind of stuff. And so anyway, the next thing to discuss about computer forensics is ways that people think that they're safe by tools and methods that people think will keep them safe, and what the commercial tools will find out of the box. First of all, things like changing file extension. Let's say you've got some JPEGs that are incriminating for whatever reason. We'll make no assumption as to what those might be. Let's say you rename those as .dll files. Well, any commercial investigatory software, if that's a real word, should be able to detect, will actually check file format and compare it to the extension. That will automatically flag those types of files for further investigation. So that's probably not a good idea. There are some free little tools I played with that seem to work reasonably well for the same thing too. The next thing is keeping stuff in unused file system space. I don't know. I'm sure there's some good software out there for doing nifty things like this. Maybe some of it is able to prevent it, your data from being detected by commercial tools and off-the-shelf tools. Unused file system space is going to get looked at. The next thing is file slack space. Let's say you have a file that it takes up, you know, in Windows or mostly, as far as I know, Windows. I don't know how this would work in an inode-based file system. You have, a cluster. And let's say you have a bunch of data out there that's been deleted. Well, you create a new text file, and it takes up 1K, but the cluster's 2K. Well, that the end of that 1K after the file ends is called file slack space. And that is the other thing that you want to be aware of from an investigatory standpoint. You'd want to take a look at what is in the file slack space, because technically it's not unused file space. It's just stuff that's allocated to a file, but it's not available or it's not being filled. And, of course, there are certainly wiping tools to keep you informed. There are certainly wiping tools that will delete or overwrite unused file system space and also file slack space, and that's something that you probably want to have at your disposal. It's probably a good idea just to flush your system every so often and get all that stuff wiped up. Some of the better things that probably have more potential is things at a lower level than the file system layer. It's things at the ATA layer, like HPA and DCO settings, but we'll come to that a little bit later. Encryption. Sure, you can encrypt your stuff. First of all, just say if you're in a courtroom and the investigator finds encrypted data, they're going to say, okay, we have found data that we cannot encrypt. Either you give us the key to unencrypt it, or we will fine you for withholding evidence. Potentially put you in jail. And I really have no idea of what established, what typical imprisonment terms are for withholding evidence. It's potential, to my understanding, and I really don't know, but I would assume that the penalty for withholding evidence is probably just as great as the maximum fine, as the maximum penalty for if they convict you. So you're probably not going to do yourself a whole lot of good by keeping your stuff encrypted. That's my opinion. I don't know. I really don't know how those things play out. The other thing to keep in mind, just encrypting the important stuff is a very bad idea. You really need to do either encrypt all your stuff, like by document type by document, or encrypt at the file system layer. You can do this, you know, obviously with most Unix systems, Linux. Some things you might want to, you definitely want to pay attention to. Do these encryption tools that you're using have integrated backdoors? And is it a robust enough encryption system? Just a simple DES encryption of a file is not going to do you any good. They can break that. You can break that probably. Triple DES, a little bit better. There's lots of other. I mean, encryption geeks will probably sneer at me for not knowing the latest Blowfish version or whatever that's out there. If you just encrypt the important stuff, you're basically creating a wider gap between the signal and the noise. Let's say all the data, all 40 gigs of porn on your hard drive is noise. The 5K of text files that's encrypted is the signal. So if you encrypt everything, that makes it harder for them to pull out exactly what they need to focus on. And if, let's say, they have the ability to brute force whatever encryption you're using, that also increases the difficulty with that. Okay, the next thing, besides encryption, hiding in plain sight, steganography. Just like encryption, there are different types of steganography. Some are better than others. Let's say you, if you have a 200 megabyte JPEG file of a little sailboat, that's going to stand out. And people are, that's going to get noticed. That's going to get flagged. And they're going to look for steganographically hidden data. Not all steganography is created equal. There's tools for automatically finding steganography. Like, I believe, it's been a while since I've played with this stuff, but Stegnos, I believe, was one that they had some tools for steganographically hiding stuff in JPEGs, and also for detecting steganography inside of files. There's other things you can hide. You can steganographically hide your data inside of text files. There's white space between spaces and tabs. And, you know, a lot of this rudimentary basic stuff that's out there, assuming if a forensic investigator finds steganographic tools on your disk, that's going to be a big red flag to start looking at your data and taking a closer eye at it. And also, you have to find a way to have these tools and use them, but keep them themselves from being hidden. And because that is a clue for them to do further investigation. Now, if you can keep them from knowing that you're using steganographic techniques to hide data, then you're in a better ballpark. You're in a better area because they might just not find it. Also, in articles that I've read, there are different levels of steganography. And this is an article. I have no idea on the truth of what's behind this, but I just remember reading someone that claimed to be from a three-letter agency and said that there's about four levels of steganography. And what led me by levels is how easy it is to detect steganographically hidden data inside of another file, or instead of another set of data. And they refer to the stuff that's out there in the civilian land was like level one or level two, but in the three-letter agency land, they play with stuff regularly at least at what they consider level four, being very difficult to detect this data inside of another file. So just be aware, not all steganographic tools are created equal. There's several pages sites I've seen that have some pretty good pages of different tools and stuff. Personally, I like the Stegnos tools because they seemed like they had a bit more of a clue, were a little bit better. Well put together as far as researching and understanding there's different ways to hide data. So, anyway, that's the discussion on that. Okay, I think we're going to wrap this up. It's starting to get a little long. We're going to call this part one of this computer forensics episode. And we're going to cover we're going to basically do the second half of this at a later time. So hopefully you guys will look forward to that. If I've been boring, maybe you won't, but anyway. So this is the end of this episode of TWAT Radio. I've been DOS Man, and I'll talk to you later.